Well, good evening, everyone. Please sit comfortably, whatever allows you to listen to the talk. You're welcome to look up or not. Tonight, I wanted to have a look at some of Hong Zhe's writings. We recently had the commuter retreat here, and Steve Wallace and I gave a talk on the guidepost for Guidepost for Silent Illumination. It's in our liturgy book by Hong Zhe. And I really love his writings. He was a teacher in China around the, I think it was around the 12th century. It's quite a long time ago. And he was a great influence on Dogen, who we spend a lot of time talking about and studying his writings. We might say that Hong Zhe also has been very influential in our practice. Anyway, we gave this talk, and then afterwards, it was Steve Wallace and I, and Steve said, you know, you always say how much you enjoy Hong Zhe's writings, but I don't get it, because you're so practical and down to earth, and you always insist on that practice has to do with everyday life, and like, where does that intersect with Hong Zhe? So I had to think about that. Really, I'm not quite sure. Let me just read a little bit of his writings to give you the flavor and see what you think. So this one is called. These are just like paragraph-long talks that he gave. This one is called 10 Billion Illuminating Spirits. The way wanders in the empty middle of the circle, reaching the vacancy where appearances are forgotten. I'm going to interrupt it already after the first sentence, so you can see that maybe this doesn't quite describe your life. It doesn't really describe mine, usually. However, there's a sort of a tingly feeling that I get when I read these words. And on the other hand, I don't really trust that tingliness. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that can make me feel that way that doesn't necessarily mean that they are true and that I should be inspired by them. I'm sure that people who listen to political speeches sometimes feel that way on either side. Maybe listening to a favorite rock band's lyrics might have that. You know, it's really not indicative. To go a little farther beyond that, if one feels inspiration, to question, is there truth here? Is there something behind it? Insist on finding this out for yourself. And so he continues. The pure ultimate self blazes, brilliant simply from inherent illumination. Facing the boundary of the object world without yet creating the sense gates, realize the subtlety of how to eliminate the effects of the swirling flow of arising and extinction. Rely only on the source of creation. If you feel a shadow of a hair's gap, nothing will be received. Just experience and respond appropriately. From this singular impact, many thousands of roads open, and all things are preeminent. With this unification, I radiantly speak the Dharma. The self divides into 10 billion distinct illuminating spirits. Distinguish these without falling into names and classifications, and accord fully without effort. The mirror is clear and magnanimous. The valley is empty, but echoes. From the beginning, unbound by seeing or hearing, the genuine self romps and plays in samadhi without obstruction. When enacted like this, how could it not be beneficial? So you get a little taste of Hong Zhu's writings and the apparent great gap between what he is describing and what we may experience in our day-to-day lives. And so as I thought about this and trying to get hold of it somewhere to be able to dig in a bit, really what came forward for me was just the title of the book. I'm not even sure that it's the title of that Hong Zhu wrote, you know, for his writings. Maybe it's just the title that the editor, the translator, gave it. But it's called Cultivating the Empty Field. And I really appreciate that title. I like how it has both sides written in, the absolute, the empty field, and then the relative, the cultivating, having to come forth and do something. And so I wanted to just look at the title a bit for tonight. So beginning with the field, what is this field that he's talking about? In our verse of the Kesa, that we don't usually recite that here, but we do during Sesshin. And it begins, vast is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. My favorite line, actually, in all of the liturgy, formless field of benefaction. Another one of those tingly things. But really, it has to mean something to me, right? Not just lovely words. So formless to me means it has no edges. It's covering everything. There is no limit. That's a lot of benefaction, spread out everywhere. And in fact, in this excerpt, Hong Zhu said, the mirror, we might say the field, is clear and magnanimous. Same thing. There is some basis of compassion, of benefaction, of magnanimousness to this universe that Hong Zhu found, and that we're being invited to touch upon as well, or to allow it to reach us. So this field includes everything. And everything means all that we know, all that we feel, that we sense, that we think, but also all that we don't know. So the field is sometimes in the light, but also sometimes very dark. And this is equally a part of our life that tends to go unnoticed. I mean, of course, because it's dark. It's dark to the thinking mind, to the mind that tends to shine a spotlight on things and determine what it is and put it into a category so that we can tell where we are in relationship to it. But not everything can be treated in that way. So our heart beats without us having to shine any light on it at all. It does this darkly. And our emotions arise out of who knows where, and our thoughts, all coming forth from somewhere dark that our minds, our thinking minds, can't take hold of, but nevertheless that operate fully, that have their influence in our life, that drive our lives. So this field of magnanimousness, including the light and the dark. And the title says that this field is empty. I'm going to digress a bit. I went over to the MIT. I work close to MIT, and I went over to the Coop, their bookstore, and was sifting through books at lunchtime, recreationally. And they have this whole series, it's I think put out by the Oxford Press, of short introductions. They're just slim little books, little volumes, that are short introductions to all different subjects. So it might be a short introduction to Shakespeare, or a short introduction to astrology, or a short introduction to, mathematics. Is there such thing as a short introduction? Anyway, so there are like hundreds of these in the series. And I have seen this before, so I was familiar with it, and I looked for my favorite book out of that series, which is The Short Introduction to Nothing. Sure enough, they had it. And so I pulled it out and paged through it. And the first time that I saw that book, that tingle came, you know, and I really hoped that when I opened it up, all the pages would be empty. Would that not be wonderful? How would one read such a book? I mean, every page, you would just stay with it, right? Just the book and you. Nothing in between. And how would you know when you'd gotten to the end of it? At some point, you would just turn the page, and there it would be again. But unfortunately, the authors had a different concept, and they filled the book up with information about nothing. And in a way, this empty field that we're talking about is just like that. The word empty doesn't necessarily mean that there's nothing there. What it refers to is nothing that abides, nothing that has its own substance, nothing that can be taken hold of and held, things that come and go on this field, this empty field. In the Heart Sutra, it says, no sensation, perception, mental reaction, and no consciousness. So it's referring to this emptiness that includes sensations, of course, because we have them, right? And perceptions, but that they themselves are empty of any abiding substance. They come and they go. And we can easily see this with sensations and perceptions. Sometimes our body feels tired, and other times it feels energetic, and sometimes we're in a noisy room, and other times it's very quiet. The heater comes on, and then it goes off. So things come and go and change all the time. Nothing abides. For the longest time, years and years, when I heard that line in the Heart Sutra, no sensation, perception, mental reaction, no consciousness, I kind of skipped over that last part about the consciousness, because I have always sort of reserved a consciousness as the me that experiences all the coming and going, right? But the Heart Sutra says, reconsider that even consciousness, even this awareness of the sensations and perceptions comes and goes. And indeed, you know, we can verify that as well. We can lose consciousness. We sleep at night and we aren't conscious of what's going on. And when we die, where does that consciousness go? Don't know. All this emptiness. I came upon a quote yesterday. I was reading a book by Dao Wei, and I thought that this might be interesting to throw into the mix. He says, and he was also a Chinese master at the time, it was at the same time, right? Weren't they contemporaries? Do you know? Were they? I think. Existence cannot be grasped. Non-existence cannot be grasped either. Winter's cold and summer's heat cannot be grasped. Inside, outside, and in between cannot be grasped. The one who speaks like this cannot be grasped either. Not even a fine hair can be grasped. Neither you nor I can be grasped. Ungraspability itself also cannot be grasped. amidst ungraspability, apprehending things this way, when you get to this point, how will you seek? What will you seek? With what would you seek? Even this how will you seek has no applicability. Hence, these words too are not acceptable. Since these words are not accepted, I certainly have nothing to say, and you certainly have nothing to hear. So really, sweeping away everything and then sweeping away the sweeping away, emptying the emptiness, so that, because we endlessly grasp. This is how we found our way in the world. It's what we've come to trust, something to hold on to. Lin Ji has a line about that you can't drive a stake into the empty sky. But so you might say we can't drive stakes into the empty field. But we do. We do all the time. And we build walls there. All of our strategies are built up there. And we try to keep things out, and we try to keep other things in. We're sure that this is, we're okay now, we're safe, right? But they're all driven into an empty field, all built upon emptiness. And sooner or later, those strategies fail, or they do more harm in our lives than good. So it behooves us to notice this. Is there another way to live that doesn't drive those stakes? It doesn't depend upon them. And so we come to the cultivating part. As I was thinking about this, I was reminded of one of the koans in the Blue Cliff record. I had to look it up, and so I wrote it down. It's case number 25. It's very short. It says, the hermit Renge Ho took up his staff before an assembly and said, when the old worthies reached here, why didn't they stay? Here being the empty field. And he himself answered his question. It has no power for the way. So, well and good about this empty field and not being able to build anything there. But still we live. We move about in this world. If we are stuck in this empty place, where is the power? How can it come forth? So we are exhorted to cultivate the empty field. So what does that mean? What does that look like? How do we bring forth the power of the way? Seems like a pretty big job. I suppose on one hand, we can't help but do so. There's a difference between growing weeds and really cultivating. And it seems to me that cultivating is what we practice when we are here on our cushions. And what is it that we're practicing? It's really quite simple, straightforward. We're meeting our lives just as they are, not driving any stakes in, not building any walls, not refusing anything, not holding on to anything, grasping ungraspability. Noticing how we do that again and again, and then refraining from it if we can. But the important thing, the noticing. Then we can give power to the way. There's room for it to come forth, unobstructed, no walls in the way, no stakes, trying to hold on to anything. A So this was the connection that I found between Hong Zhi's words and our everyday lives. Really important connection. We are that connection in every moment. Our lives are that connection. And we have the opportunity to cultivate or to turn away and go. I found in my own life that a weedy field is really not a very pleasant place to live, that it's worth the effort to cultivate. And cultivating can be pretty difficult sometimes. In a way, it requires us to let go of, that's not quite the right word, because you can't. You have to hold on to what you have to hold on to until you see that you don't have to anymore. But at some point, there's a recognition that the old hopes and dreams that we had formulated and then tried to move toward really aren't the thing, really aren't relevant. And I think that there's a sort of grieving process that can go on in recognizing that and sort of just letting it drift by and fall away. And this is not easy. It's a part of why we come together as a Sangha, to support one another. It's difficult work, but it is through this work that the power of the way can be expressed in my life and in your life, in each of us, in the 10 billion illuminated spirits.